to order. We're having way too much fun 70? Up here today.
Well, what's going
on? And we're... I would just like to let folks know about a little bit of change in the agenda. Unfortunately, the amendments for 27-23 are not ready, so we will not be doing a work session on that. We will be doing a work session on House Bill 2626, and then we will be opening up an informational meeting on the Mid-Columbia Steelhead Recovery Plan. So for the ODF&W folks, you will be on after House Bill 2626, and you're welcome to stay for that hearing as well. So with that, I will open up a work session, I should say, on a hearing, on House Bill 2626. Committee members, you should have in front of you a pile of amendments. Kat, do you want to attempt to walk through, or we'll call folks up and explain these?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'll just briefly explain to you that you have in front of you amendments that are fairly complete in themselves and that you could adopt any or all of them, and they would later be combined by LC, and they should all work fine together. You'll make that decision. You have the dash 2, just for reference. You already saw that amendment. There's also a dash 5 that adds some changes from Hewlett-Packard and a dash 4 amendment and a dash 6 amendment that address some issues raised by the Oregon Recyclers.
ORRA. Resource Recycling
That's
Association.
The 4 and the 6. And then the dash 3 was one you also saw earlier, I believe, or may not have actually. That takes the dash 2 and makes some changes that were requested by the TV manufacturers. So that's the brief overview, but you'll get a lot more information.
Thank you, Kat. And what we'll do, now that we're in work session, I will ask each of the sponsors of these amendments to come up and explain to the committee what they do, and then we can ask questions. I appreciate, once again, all the hard work that went into these different amendments from the stakeholder work group, many of the folks who have helped craft this bill, and I hope that Legislative Council is listening because of the hours and hours and hours that Legislative Council spent on these different amendments. We owe them a big thanks. I know they were here over the weekend also doing work on this. So first I'd like to ask Holly to come up from ORRA to talk about the dash 4s and the dash 6s.
Madam Chair, while you're waiting, I was going to share this picture with you that I took while I was visiting First Step, a nice little 81-year-old woman who's in their recycling facility trying to earn enough hours to get a computer for one of her relatives.
Well, thank you for sharing that, and thank you for doing homework over the weekend or on Friday and visiting First Step came in. Next Step came in and testified in front of this committee, and Representative Beyer went and visited. And do you have anything to report that you'd like to share with the committee?
They were recycling everything. It was pretty amazing, the information and the materials they were recycling and reusing, which was really the bigger part of their facility, the amount of people in there that they had doing that. They were looking for a little extra space to expand because they're expecting onslaught of televisions coming up. So,
yeah. Well, thank you, and thank you for visiting and following up. We really appreciate it. We look forward to working with them. Okay, Holly.
Okay. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee and staff, thank you for the opportunity to explain these amendments today. For the record, my name is Holly Sears, and I'm the Governmental Affairs Director for the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association.
I said resource.
That's all right, also known as ORA. First, I'd like to thank Chair Dingfelder and Vice Chair Burley and also Vice Chair Cannon for their help with this bill and with the amendments before you today. I'm here today to talk with you briefly about two amendments that our association submitted for House Bill 2626. The first amendment is in the dash 4 amendments and is regarding the landfill ban language of the bill. It's on page 15, lines 7 through 17. And the purpose of this amendment is to bring clarity to the inspection process for transfer stations and landfill operators. After working in cooperation with DEQ on this issue, we have reached an agreement that the amendment before you today comprehensively addresses our members' concerns and sufficiently clarifies the knowingly standard for a facility inspection.
I'm in the wrong
This amendment also has the full support of the Association of Oregon Counties. I'd like to thank the DEQ for taking the time to work with us on this important issue, and we believe this bill is better as a result. The second amendment is in the Dash 6 amendment, and it's on page 14, lines 12 through 14. This amendment ensures that the collection process piece of House Bill 2626 does not violate the current solid waste management collection service relationship between solid waste collectors and local cities and counties as authorized in ORS Chapters 459 and 459A. The purpose of this amendment is to ensure that the bill does not unintentionally undermine the existing statutory authority that establishes solid waste collection programs in Oregon. Once again, we worked with DEQ to come up with this language, and our association, as well as the League of Oregon Cities, the Association of Oregon Counties, and Waste Management all agree that this amendment is sufficient clarification. So thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions about these amendments.
Okay, thank you, Holly. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions. The first is, Holly, will you confirm that the underlying text of these amendments, the multi-page amendments, or the Dash 2 version, are there any other? Have you made any changes besides the ones that you've pointed out?
No, our amendments are in the Dash 4 and the Dash 6, and they are amending the Dash 2.
Okay, yes. And they are only the points, the sections that you pointed to just now?
I believe so, okay. Yes.
That's my understanding as
follow
well.
Follow-up?
Yeah. Yeah, follow-up, thanks. This on the Dash 6, this change that prohibits superseding the local regulation, would that or might that prohibit a new entrant to the market for electronic waste pickup from operating a door-to-door service?
Chair Dingfelder, Vice Chair Cannon, the reason for this amendment is basically in the premium service definition, we understand that, for example, HP or Dell have at-home service pickups where, say they use a mail provider like UPS to drop off a box, and that person puts their e-waste in it and sends it back. We're fine with that. Our concern is the curbside collection piece. Curbside collection is a term of art in our industry, and we're just clarifying that if that happens, if you have curbside collection in this program, that it's done through the existing franchises.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you. Occasionally, I'll get a call from Goodwill or AARP or someone who's coming around doing collection of used goods, and presumably that doesn't violate the terms of your arrangements with the local jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be possible for a Next Step or a Free Geek to set up a program where they come by and pick something up off my porch under this language?
Chair Dingfelder and Vice Chair Cannon, I can. My understanding of that is that basically it depends on if it's part of the if it's a service or if it's the primary service that they're providing or if it's supplemental to the service. So if they're doing it for I'm hoping that this would clarify that, because what we're hoping is that if there's some curbside, our concern is that someone could come in and just start a whole new business off of picking up things curbside, picking up e-waste, and saying that they're doing it under this authority in the statute, whereas we have contracts with our local cities and counties we have franchises basically to pick up this type of material because it's solid waste. And so since we're the collectors of solid waste, we're hoping that that we're the ones to pick this up. Does that answer your question?
DEQ to come up.
If DEQ has anything to add on this point, I'd be interested, but I'm not there in this.
You'd have to come up if you want to add anything. Bob, and for the record.
Madam Chair, Bob Danko, DEQ. All I was going to do is offer our attorney with the Department of Justice if he has any comments. I surely don't want to get into this myself. He's in the back if you'd like to hear from him.
He's hiding.
Larry, would you like to come up and address this? It's good to get it on the record and just clarify, since Representative Cannon has brought up an excellent question. Thank you for being here, and for the record, state your name.
Madam Chair, I was afraid that if I came, I was going to get hauled up here on something like this. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Larry Edelman, Oregon Department of Justice. On this particular issue, the department's understanding of the clarification is that the language would prevent interference with franchises for collection. You would have to look to the actual franchise agreements to determine the specifics of whether there would be an interference. And so this language is just very general to make it clear that there's no intent in 2626 to interfere with city county ability to franchise and enforce their franchises. Does that help?
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Okay. I think Representative Smith has a question.
Well, I don't have a question, Madam Chair. I just want to add to that. I have financed multiple businesses who are in the collection business, and I guess I'd concur with what you're saying. There are franchise agreements with local government, and in those franchise agreements spell out specifically what can and cannot be collected. And as part of those franchise agreements, most often there's an exclusivity clause in there that allows the franchisee to be able to have exclusive rights to picking up. And so if someone wanted to start their own business, they have every right to, but they're going to have to most likely work with local government in trying to negotiate with the community to pick up a franchise to do that. And I mean, that's if you're going to get into the business, that's how you would do it. You're not just going to go start picking up garbage or recycled electronic gold or whatever it calls.
Chair Dingfelder, if I may add, thank you for those comments. And also, we feel that going through the local ORS 459 and 459A, going through the local cities and counties for this type of activity, we feel that that also encourages the local infrastructure that's part of this bill, and also provides for oversight and to ensure that environmentally sound practices are taking place, because if you have that oversight, then that's a lot more possible. So,
all right, thank you. Any other questions or clarifications on the dash fours and the dash sixes?
I have a quick question.
Okay.
Maybe it's not relating to this, but the franchisee who's picking up just stuff, are they able to pass that cost on to the people that they're picking it up from? I put my computer out on the sidewalk.
Right. I believe that would be a premium service, so it could be something that would be it would be an extra charge. It would be an additional charge. So
there's nothing in the language that would prohibit local government from working with their local pickup provider to add that fee to customers who choose to put this on.
Right. That's my Chair Dingfelder, Representative Smith. That's my understanding. Yes.
Follow-up or question, Representative Burley?
Yeah, Holly, I'd like you to elaborate on that a little bit, because I was of the impression the way this program is being set up, there would be no charge to the end user or the generator, if you will, in this context. So if I understood what you just said, if I want to be able to leave the TV set at my curb, I'm going to have to pay to have that ability?
Chair Dingfelder, Vice Chair Burley, the answer to that question is there is one aspect of this, as I understand it, there is one aspect of this program that you can charge for, and that's the premium service piece, and that includes the at-home pickup service that HP and Dell, for example, provide, and also curbside collection. So if you're dropping it off at a disposal site or a collection site, that's free. But if you're going beyond that and you want someone to come to your doorstep, you...
Holly, that's not true, because there are programs like HP already offers and will continue to offer, my understanding, free pickup if you're to mail it back.
But, Madam Chair, it is correct that under the contractor program, let's start with that, the program that the DEQ will essentially administer with contracted entities, including perhaps some of Holly's members, they are required only to set up a convenient free location point of drop-off at cities over 10,000. I mean, they are not required to go door-to-door. We are not setting up a free door-to-door system. They may choose to enter, you know, to pay, or a local city may choose to pay for that door-to-door service, but we are not establishing a program whereby every Oregonian will be able to put a computer on their doorstep.
And that was never the intent of the original program or discussions in the work group, but if there was an entity, a hauler that wanted to offer that service, then it would be an additional fee if they would pick it up at your doorstep. The hauler would. Now, HP, the manufacturer, can offer that, and they can offer to have it you mail or have a UPS come and pick it up, but the curbside was not included as part of the requirement. Not everybody in the state has a curbside, number one, and that was not discussed in the work group. That was not agreed upon.
And Chair Dingfelder, if I can just follow up to that, if one of our disposal sites happens to contract with a contractor program or DEQ and they were to drop it off to our disposal site, then that would be free. That is a part of the program. But if it's something beyond that and it's something where we're going curbside, that's part of a premium service, which my understanding is that would be an extra charge to the customer.
Do you want to add anything?
No, I think that's exactly right.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. If I'm the owner of Heppner Garbage Disposal Service and someone puts a computer out on the sidewalk, but I don't have an agreement with them for the premium service, am I able to just leave it there and keep going? Pick up the rest of the trash, but leave the computer?
Chair Dingfelder, Representative Smith, I believe that we can either, I think what we would do is we would leave a note, generally what we do is leave a note and give them the options for, we can pick this up, but it'll be an extra fee, or tell them, give them information on where they can drop it off for free.
I guess the reason I raise this issue is in rural Oregon, we have to be sensitive to the fact that most of your garbage disposal companies are entrepreneurs with maybe one, two employees, and the second employee is usually the spouse keeping the books. And if we create a situation where they're now obligated to pick this stuff up, most of them are not going to have the infrastructure or the capability to be segregating out electronic waste from all the other refuse, and that's a real issue.
Representative Smith, they won't be obligated because now with the bill, there will be a landfill ban added that says they can say we can't take it because it can't be accepted by the landfill.
Right.
Makes sense. That's, and we didn't want to have that in place until there's recycling infrastructure in place, so there's somewhere for it to go. Currently, it can be put in the landfill.
Right. I just wanted to make sure of that. Yeah. Thank you.
No, it's a good clarification. So anything else that you'd like to add?
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Madam Chair, I was going to make a motion if you're entertaining one. And can we combine these, Pat, into one motion or do it separately? All right. Madam Chair, I move the -4 amendments to House Bill 2626.
Representative Cannon moves the -4 amendments to House Bill 2626. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, are we going to have an opportunity to further discuss this bill? Or
every amendment. Yep.
Well, I have questions, but I'm not sure who to address them to. How would you like me to...
Is it about either of these two?
About the bill in its entirety. I've got questions regarding market share for manufacturers, the disclosing of that. I have issues regarding the penalties and how that's going to be enforced. And then I have questions about the information dissemination of retailers.
We will, in the -5s, that'll come up.
I'll wait till then. Okay. Thank you.
So any questions or discussions about the -4s?
Madam Chair, just the only thing that was highlighted to us were the provisions on page 15. Do I understand then that those the only things that's changing in the underlying bill are this language that's on page 15?
Right, line 7 to 17.
Right, okay.
That's it.
Now,
okay.
To be clear, we haven't actually adopted the -2, so really this is, we are now adopting the -2s with this change, as I understand it. So this is, we are basically replacing the...
Well, we could wait and do all the motions all together with all of the...
That would be fine, too.
Yeah, we could do that and have a discussion. So you want to withdraw your motion?
I withdraw my motion.
Okay. So then we'll go on to the -5s, which is where all the other issues will come up before we do the -3s. actually, what I'd like to do is have DEQ come up, it sounds like, to address some of the questions that Representative Smith, since Representative Smith wasn't here for either of the two hearings on the other bill, it sounds like he has some questions. Then we'll have House Hewlett-Packard come up and talk about the Dash 5 amendments. And fortunately, because the Dash 2s, what the Dash 5s will replace the Dash 2s. And because we did not adopt the Dash 2s previously, the changes in the Dash 5s will replace that. It's really confusing. Just make sure you follow along. Follow the bouncing ball.
You got a scorecard to keep track of all this?
So, we're not going to have the Dash 2s. We're not adopting the Dash 2s. Dash 5s replaces those.
Right, I understand.
So, Bob, can you walk us through some of the changes in the Dash 5s, and we already discussed the Dash 2s at length before, and then we'll have Hewlett-Packard come up and talk about that as well.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Bob Danko, Department of Environmental Quality. The Dash 5s only changed the Dash 2s in a very, very few areas, and I could, read through the bill and tell you, I think it might be best to let Hewlett-Packard described those changes just because they're the ones who brought those forward to you.
Right. My understanding is because the Dash 5 replaces the Dash 2s with the same language that we wouldn't be adopting the Dash 2s, that we would be adopting the Dash 5s. So I think first, because Representative Smith was not here for the discussion on the Dash 2s, then why don't we take his general questions first, then we'll have Hewlett-Packard come
up. I was here in spirit.
Yeah. So I want to make sure that his questions are addressed first, and I think he had some questions about the fees, so I know you can answer that. So, Representative Smith, why don't you go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. my understanding is this bill establishes tiers of fees based on the manufacturer's percentage of market share. Is that per electronic item?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, it's market share of the entire mix of devices.
Walk me through that some more, if I may. I'm Hewlett-Packard, and I have laptops, I have desktops, I have calculators. Is it market share based on each one of those?
On page 6 of the bill, gets into the, we're talking about registration fees that are based on.
Help me find out where should I be.
Page 6 of the Dash 5s.
Let me get there. Okay.
Also, you may want to step, Representative Smith, what is considered covered electronic devices, since he mentioned a device that is not a covered electronic device.
Yes, the bill narrows what people think of as electronic devices to four areas. It provides a definition on page 2. It says covered electronic device means a computer, a desktop computer, a television, or a monitor. And other than that, it's not called a covered electronic device. So it doesn't include calculators. It doesn't include VCRs and so on. Those are the only four areas that this bill addresses. So those are the covered electronic devices.
Okay.
So back to the way the bill is arranged, there's an annual registration fee for any manufacturer of a covered electronic device. And that registration fee is what pays DEQ's administration of this bill. And that registration fee is based on categories of market share. And the bill provides four tiers, so to speak, of fee. The first break is for manufacturers selling more than 1% total number of units of covered electronic devices. The next tier is 0.1% to 1%, and so on. So it places a manufacturer in a tier for the base, for the purpose of determining the registration fee.
So if I can just follow up.
So
is that 1% based upon sales in the state of Oregon or total gross sales of a company?
It's sold in this state the previous calendar year. However, because that data is going to be very difficult to come by, there's language in the bill that allows us to use available information that we can obtain to determine who fits into what tier.
Can you elaborate on that? What's the information out there? How would you go about doing that?
There's national sales data and so on that is generally put together that I think all manufacturers understand and believe is relatively accurate.
Does the department have qualified staff to economically analyze those projections?
We anticipate contracting for that or using other hiring or using other acceptable data.
May I follow up on that question? Forgive me for interrupting,
no,
Representative
please.
Smith, but before you left that topic, you raised a question now in my mind. Bob, the way on page 6 it's worded, it says the total number of units of covered electronic devices. Now, if I'm a manufacturer and I only sell computer monitors, is my fee based on the percent of computer monitors sold, or does it include TVs, monitors, and desktops, the whole thing?
The whole thing. It gets very difficult to... It would be very difficult, Representative Burley, to break it into those categories. It becomes administratively very challenging to do that.
And Bob, just to follow up, this is consistent with the approach Washington State is taking. Is that correct?
Yes, it is, Madam Chair. And in fact, they have spent a lot of time and effort, as representatives in the audience can say, and in developing how they're going to do this. They have more tiers than we do, but it's the same approach.
And that was discussed in the work group, and that's one of the reasons that we took this approach, is to be consistent with as consistent as possible with other states, especially for the manufacturers that are dealing with this program. And you can ask HP that question possibly when they come up. Other questions?
It talks about if you sell more than 1% of the total number of units, will you be sending out to the companies the total number of units for the state of Oregon so they can determine whether or not they're more than 1%?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, we will work collaboratively, meaning that we won't go into a back room and do this. We will, do it very transparently and share the information with everyone. But so everybody will know where they sit and how we determined which category they fall into. Now, the question, will we determine the exact number of units, or will it be good enough to determine that they're over 1%? That's a different question.
What's the answer to the second one?
I think we're going to learn by experience. We probably will try to be as accurate as we can. But, again, you're using, national data, and it may not break down to the exact number of units. But it should break down pretty clearly to which category, which tier you fit into.
Is there an appeals process? Excuse me.
We would try to take into account any information that somebody can provide us that demonstrates, that helps us with our task. In the state.
Let me rephrase that if I can.
No, I know.
Okay. You folks say I have more than 1%. I say I don't have more than 1%. Do I have the ability to appeal?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, yes, but not formally written into the bill. And I just want to give the analogy of the state of Washington. They have, through administrative rule, page upon page of administrative rule that they are developing, set up a very elaborate procedure. What we are trying to do in this state is to hit the ground running and then do administrative rules as we go. So we don't delay the whole system of collection for the couple years it will take to do the administrative rules. If it turns out that we need to set up a formal appellate procedure, we can do that in administrative rule.
This is all going to be public information.
Yeah.
Can you tell me the companies right now who sell more than 1% in the state of Oregon?
I didn't bring that material. I could tell you which companies the state of Washington has determined fit into that category. I don't have it right here, but Washington has adopted their rules that list the companies and where they fall into their registration tier system. And I believe, I'd have to go look, but there's about 20 companies, I believe, that may fall into this first tier in the state. But Washington has, you know, they have the names of the companies and so on, where they fall into the tiers. They've already done that.
Okay. Just one more question on this section. Talk about the penalty portion if I'm supposed to be in the $15,000 category and I send in a check for five, we have a dispute. What's my penalty? Or what if I miscalculated and you folks come back and say I was wrong? What's my penalty?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I don't know if I can answer that exactly. I could find out. Although, in a program like this, the question might be better. We say, you know, you fall into 15 and you refuse to pay that. And obviously that's a violation of the law and so on. A dispute about where you pay and it should be based on numbers that we should be able to come to an agreement with you of where you fall.
If I can just move to retailers really quick, and I just have one or two questions here. under retailer section 9, item 2, it says a retailer shall provide to a consumer at the time of the sale of a covered electronic device information from the department's website address that provides information about where and how a consumer can recycle covered electronic devices in Oregon. Did you folks do any type of cost analysis to the retailer to have to provide that service?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, no, I don't think the work group did, and I don't think that has been done.
Do we? And Representative Smith, just so you know, and you're welcome to bring up Julie Brandis, who is a member, that there was no objection to providing this information in the work group.
Do you anticipate the retailer needing to train their employees on how to disseminate this information?
Representative Smith, the way that we've tried to put this together is to make it as easy as possible on retailers. For instance, we will be preparing the information on our website that is in printable format, so retailers can just print it off, make copies, and they'll have what they have. They don't have to put it together, figure out what to give out, and so on. So we've tried to address, tried to make it as easy as possible for them, So we think it's pretty workable, and I think the retailer representative thinks it's pretty workable.
Okay, just two more questions, and then I'm done. How does the retailer in Haines, Oregon, know that this is an obligation of theirs now and know the proper training that goes with their obligation?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, like any law, there's some personal responsibility. However, we have built into this what we call technical assistance. As in anything new that our department's involved with, we spend a lot of time trying to bring everybody along, because it doesn't work well if there's somebody in Haines that doesn't understand it. And so I expect we'll go the extra mile to help people know what their responsibilities are and to help them do it.
And then last question, what's the punishment for a retailer that inadvertently fails to provide a consumer with the information?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, we talked about the consequences or the penalties before in committee, but for that type of information, we have what we call a penalty structure that's in the administrative rule, and the long and short of it is it's probably be what we consider a class 3 or lowest class violation, and usually they never get beyond the warning letter stage. You'd have to really hit us over the head hard to get past the warning letter stage.
Thank you very much for that. I appreciate the questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for Bob before we bring up Hewlett Packard? Okay, thank you, Bob. Don't go too far. I'm sure we may have some other questions for you. Marcy? And I don't know if you want to walk us line through line.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Paul Kosker representing Hewlett-Packard, and with me is Marcy Eastham. Nearly all of the suggestions made by Hewlett-Packard were clarification and not substantive. I probably have most of them here if you would like me to go through, but let me give you an example just so you know. In the definition of recycling...
These are the dash fives.
These are the dash fives. Yep. In the definition of recycling, for example, which is on page 4 of the dash fives in line 12, when you go down to line 21, it says recycling does not include, and the original language of the bill was landfill disposal or incineration, and our clarification was to add the word of covered electronic devices. So I don't think that's a substantive change. And if it pleases the chair and the committee, rather than going through all of those that are just clarifications that I think we all agree are clarifications and not substantive, I'd just like to mention two issues that we thought were most important in those clarifications.
Okay.
One is in the definition of manufacture, if you change back to page 3, it was important, I think, for the functioning of the bill to make sure that manufacture was defined so that it included all the people who were responsible for manufacturing or selling these products in the state, whether they are doing it now or have done it in the past. And this was debated at great length in the work group how to word the bill so that it covers both the present tense and the past tense. And the way that that has been done is, if you now turn to page 5, section 3, it's been clarified in this version, the dash 5s, that sections 2 through 13 of this bill, the substantive provisions, apply to all manufacturers engaging in the activities set forth in section 2.6 on or before or after the effective date. So it's people who used to manufacture and have gone out of business, people who are still manufacturing, and people in the future who start manufacturing. So that's one important clarification. But again, I think it's not a change in the intent of the bill. That was always the intent, as I understand it, of the work group. And then the other important issue that we felt to clarify was important had to do with the manufacturer's programs. In lieu of paying into the state as part of the contractor program, a manufacturer like HP can run its own program, and the requirements for that are set out in Section 5, starting on page 7. And one of the requirements is what kind of service needs to be provided everywhere so that everybody in the state has the ability to have convenient service, and that starts at the bottom of page 7 on line 30. And as revised, it talks about including convenient service in every county of the state and at least one collection site in any city that has a population of more than 10,000, that they be staffed and open to the public at a frequency adequate to meet the needs of the area being served. And that, I think, allows the appropriate flexibility so that we can design collection sites at the various places around the state that are as necessary to serve the people in those places in the state. Other than that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and Marcy Eastham is here as well, of course, too.
Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to ask you about the collection requirements for the manufacturer program. You've alluded to the fact that HP and anyone else who chooses to go that the manufacturer-operated route will be required to set up convenient service in every county and at least one collection site in every city. Is it HP's intention then to operate a collection site in every city over 10,000?
Yes.
Madam Chair, Representative Cannon, I don't know that the company's made a final decision on that, but if it does decide not to join the contractor program and to run its own sites, that either it, in conjunction with other manufacturers, which the bill allows, or it alone, would do so, yes.
Okay. And then I want to move down to sub 3, just beneath it, starting line 7 of page 8 on the dash 5s. Manufacturer choosing to implement a manufacturer program shall meet or exceed the requirements that we just talked about, the one collection site in every city over 10,000 and convenience service in every county, and provide for collection, transportation, and recycling covered electronic devices free of charge, except that a manufacturer that provides premium service for a covered entity may charge for the additional cost of that premium service. Where HP is offering a pickup program, a through-the-mail pickup program, is it your, does Is it your understanding that the bill requires you to operate that for free to the consumer, or does that fall under a premium service for which they're not required to provide it free of charge?
Madam Chair, Representative Cannon, if the only service operated by a manufacturer were a premium service, it would have to offer that premium service for free. In other words, it couldn't use the option in the bill to charge for that if that were the only service it operated. I think it's likely to assume that some companies will offer the kinds of basic service required under Section 5 at sites, and in addition, often a premium service for which there might be a charge. There might be a charge. There might be a part of that charge offset by a coupon. There might be. Sometimes there's no charge. But the option to operate both, I think, is a live option for companies.
So if you're operating a convenient drop-off point in every city over 10,000, so you've established convenient service via that drop-off, could you, under the Dash Fives, then charge for the mailback program?
Madam Chair, Representative Cannon, yeah, I believe that the Dash Fives permits that. Whether a company chooses to do that's another question, but yes, it would permit it as long as you met the convenient site for free requirement. If you then chose to do something beyond that, a premium service, you could charge.
Okay, can we get clarification or confirmation from DEQ that that's their read as well? I just want to be really clear on this point.
Bob, you want to come up, or do we want to have Larry? We're pointing at each other.
Yeah.
I think this is really important to get clarification. I think it's important, Ben, Representative Cannon, discussion in the work group and what was discussed for that to make sure that we're clear for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Bob Danko, DEQ. Yes, I think. I don't want to start getting into the very fine details of this with Paul, because he has talked about it with Larry Edelman of our Department of Justice more than me. I don't want to get into the details of that conversation, but generally, yes. The one clarification I would make is the bill requires convenient service in every county and a collection site. So just having a collection site in cities over 10,000 isn't providing convenient service in every county.
And we agree.
Okay, and then let me state for the record that I believe the consensus of the work group was that there would be convenient, free, accessible, statewide recycling. We've tried to go about it a variety of different ways, talking about every county, every city over 10,000, mail-in versus pickup versus drop-off points. The bottom line is that our intention is for it to be convenient and accessible to everyone living in every corner of the state. The way I read this, and I think you're agreeing, is that manufacturer programs will be required to operate convenient service in every county and drop-off points in cities over 10,000. Now, what that convenient service means in a county where there is no drop-off point because there isn't a city over 10,000, or the city over 10,000 in that county is 150 miles away, is that there needs to be some, that the manufacturer needs to operate some kind of pickup or mailback program for free. And that's the way I read this, that it's not sufficient, that does not meet the standard set in the Dash 5 if you're charging for a mail-in program in a county where there's the nearest drop-off site is 150 miles away.
Madam Chair, Representative Cannon, we agree. The reason I think that we are more comfortable with the formulation in the Dash 5 is we, working with DEQ, and of course DEQ has the authority to review and must approve these programs, will need to look at all these communities and figure out what really is convenient and necessary to meet the needs. It's our goal to do that. So, yes, we share the same goal, and your statement is correct, and we agree with that.
Okay.
And just a follow-up to DEQ, do we know how many counties don't have a city with a population over 10,000, I would guess.
Many.
Yeah. Most of the rural areas, which is part of why we wanted to make sure this bill worked for rural areas that are not currently served by any collection or any recycling opportunities, and they have to drive to Bend or to, over to the west side, and that was the whole intent, is to make sure that it's provided equally in every county in the state.
Madam Chair, I know a number of them are represented by Representative Smith, Grant, Wheeler, Gilliam, Sherman, Hardy, maybe Lake. I'm not certain they're not working your district.
Morrow.
But that's the trick, is to make sure that we are able to provide services that are convenient to people in those counties, even though they do not have a city for 10,000.
At no cost. Just make sure we get that on the record.
Yeah.
Okay, Representative Burling.
Well, Madam Chair, this is a rather significant change from the original draft, and as you'll recall, I was one that raised this concern from the very beginning, that it's got to be convenient and free to the end user, especially in our rural communities. Now, if I understand what this -5 language is telling us at the bottom of page 7, top of page 8, is that in these more rural counties, there's no requirement to have a collection site.
Madam Chair, Representative Burley, no, we don't believe that's what it means. You will either have to have a collection site in the county and in those cities, and it has to be deemed to be convenient to all the people within the county, or alternatively, you're going to have to offer a premium service for free.
Where they would come to your house and pick it
door
up.
To door. Or some other kind of service that makes it convenient for all those people.
And so that is the legislative intent, to be clear, and that was discussed in the work group.
And I would add, it sounds like a good deal. I mean, I think the folks living in rural...
Madam Chair, excuse me. I believe I still have the floor here. I want to make absolutely certain on this, then. Mm-hmm. So let us take Grant County, for example. Mm-hmm. Does this bill require that there be a drop-off somewhere in Grant County that people can take their TVs or their monitors or their desktop computers and put them in a bin? I'm not worried about the staffing issue. I understand that. You don't have to have a staff person there to drop something in a metal bin. But does this say there has to be something in that county somewhere?
Madam Chair, Representative Burley, I think the actual technical answer to your question is no, so long as a manufacturer then offered free door-to-door service in that county. But if they did not do that, yes, there would have to be one or the other, both of them free.
Okay. One more follow-up, Madam Chair. So door-to-door or mail back.
Well, I meant to be mail back.
Which, you know, I think the mail back's a great opportunity and something HP I know does use, but I question the practicality of that for, you know, 42-inch diagonal TV set.
Madam Chair, Representative Burley, it actually may be far more efficient and far more convenient for people to do what UPS and those kinds of services do now, which is actually make those kind of deliveries, have them make those kinds of pickups, than running a staffed site at some location in the county that's still 50 or 60 miles away from most of where most of the county is. So although I agree with you, it's easier to get delivery services to pick up smaller things. They will pick up larger things. They deliver larger things, and that may be the most convenient and effective way to do it.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, thank you. And just also, I want to point out in -5, I do understand the issue about staffing, and I think those changes here are quite satisfactory. I think we'll work.
Thank you. I think one of the points that we discussed was if, and this isn't an issue so much in my district, but certainly in either probably more in Representative Smith's district, making somebody drive 300 miles to drop off their computer for TV versus having the ability for the company that's in the plan to either send a truck or reimburse the cost to send it back.
Madam Chair, my brother used to drive for UPS in Grant County, and I know that actually those services go to all of those locations, and so that may be the most convenient and efficient way to do this.
Okay. Any other questions or clarifications? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I want to throw this to the work group, and I want to go back to the retailers really quick. And in no way am I going to compare you to the people I'm about to raise, but in the tobacco industry, the manufacturers...
It runs accurately.
The manufacturers are responsible for printing the warning label. In the alcohol production industry, the manufacturers are responsible for producing the warning label. What I don't understand, and I'd love the work group to explain this, is how do the retailers get burdened with this responsibility to provide the information rather than the manufacturers?
Representative Cannon, and then I think it may be good to have Julie Brandes come up, who represents the retailers and can talk about this.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I don't think that issue is addressed directly. I do think it has to do with the fact that manufacturing does not take place in the state of Oregon. Retailing does, and so it's possible to, you know, do an Oregon insert more easily than it would be possible to affix an Oregon, you know, tag to the side of the TV or the computer. Perhaps, I mean, there are some who think that we're moving towards a national electronics waste system, in which case I think it'd be more likely that we'd see additional requirements on the manufacturer for notice to consumer.
And since you're also a retailer, do you want to, since you sell your products, maybe comment on the discussion and if you have any concerns about this language?
Representative Dingfelder, Marcy Eastham, Hewlett Packard. As a retailer, the bulk of our retail operations do occur over the Internet, most of our sales. We do have some, I mean, as a sole retailer, we don't have any brick-and-mortar buildings, and we, of course, resell through other distributors and resellers. It is a challenge, as Representative Cannon has alluded, to label individual products because of the way that the locations where they're manufactured and with the way that they're distributed, where they will be sent to centralized distribution facilities and then sent to various states as the product is necessarily needed to be restocked. We believe that the amendments in Dash 5 address our needs as far as being a retailer, and we support Dash 5 as it's been submitted.
Thank you.
I just feel, Madam Chair, as if the retailers are this innocent victim out there that are now going to be burdened with the responsibility that they didn't ask for. And to me, it's easy for the manufacturers to say, we don't manufacture them here, it's difficult. But I think there's a way for them to slap a sticker on the side of the box.
No.
And to meet that requirement.
Why don't we have Julie Brandes come up and address that one issue, and then I will take a motion for the Dash 5 and the Dash 4 and 6, and then we'll do the Dash 3. Yep. Thank you, Julie.
You're welcome. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Julie Brandes with Associated Oregon Industries and its Retail Council. Within our membership are some of the nation's largest retailers. To be very direct, retailers hate mandates. They hate posting mandates. They hate informational mandates. I shared with the work group a story from a couple sessions ago where we were going to have to post at whipped cream stands, you know. But the truth of the matter is retailers nationwide have said, if we move away from an ARF, and advanced recovery fee for computer recycling and television recycling. If we move away from that, which is what they did in California to address this issue, we recognize that we are playing a role with the consumer, and that is we're selling these products, and we should be able to share with them information about where to go when they are done with this product. And generally, the consumer doesn't really care about what they're going to do with this product 5 years or 10 years from now, but they might have something at their home when they go back and plug in their new TV or plug in the new computer. They'll want to say, oh, what can I do with this old television? So we see ourselves as a part of the role, playing a role and part of the solution.
Thank you. And Julie, just to clarify, we worked quite closely with you on language for the retailer. There was quite a bit of discussion about making sure the retailers are comfortable with the language.
Right. Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, yes, we did work in the work group on this language. We worked after the work group on this language. But bear in mind that I, Representative Smith, I do represent national manufacturers who are dealing with this issue in very different forms in every state. And so they're well aware of it, and I'm not quite sure how that plays out with the smaller retailers.
Madam Chair. I think the issue for me is it's a cultural difference. I'm not envisioning Best Buy. I'm envisioning Hepner TV and audio, where it's pop. There's no mom in it, and you know, and I'm trying to visualize this person being obligated to another mandate on top of all the other mandates that the small business owner already has, and I'm struggling with that.
Right.
So.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, one retail example of a mandate that the DEQ has responsibility for, and I'm not trying to draw attention to it, but they've always worked very well with retailers on, is the paper plastic. At the time of sale, retailers have to offer paper and plastic. That's in the law. It's clear as day. And I get calls about it every single session. But the truth of the matter is I've had retailers who haven't complied with that, and I usually get a call from Mr. Danko who says, could you call them and make sure they understand this? He's never slapped a $10,000 fine on any of them. Bob has it.
Okay, thank you, Julie, for that clarification. Okay. Oh, good. Here comes Representative Bertley.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2626.
Okay, Representative Cannon moves the dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2626. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Okay.
I'm going to object.
All right. We have, for the record, Representative Smith is a no. And with that, the amendment, dash 5 amendment, is adopted. And I'll take a motion for the dash.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2626.
Okay, Representative Cannon moves the dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2626. That was the Aura amendment that we just heard. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the dash 4s are adopted to House Bill 2626.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 6 amendments to House Bill 2626.
Representative Cannon moves the adoption of the dash 6 amendments to House Bill 2626. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the dash 6 amendments have been adopted. Colleagues, we have one amendment still pending, and that's the dash 3s. Representative Cannon, since you put that in, would you like to
if you can find
move
it
out?
Yes, thank you.
And I appreciate the, apologize for the confusion, but it happens when you have a lot of input on your bill. The better bill.
Madam Chair, the dash 3 amendments change section 10. So if you go to page 13 of the dash 3 amendments, lines 19 through I think the first two lines on the following page are different than they read in any of the other amendments. This proposed amendment came from the Television Manufacturers Coalition, Electronic Manufacturers Coalition, which was concerned about a particular problem with the way that cost sharing would be devised for the statewide program, which we also refer to as the contractor program. So they are proposing to cover television devices, to cost share on television devices differently than we cost share on computer devices. So this amendment divides manufacturers between those who manufacture more TVs than computers and those who manufacture more computers than TVs. And if you manufacture more TVs than computers, your portion of the cost sharing for televisions is based on your sales data related to the previous calendar year. They are concerned that the Electronic Manufacturers Coalition was concerned about the fact that most of the TVs that will come into the waste system, into the recycling system today, or let's say in 2008, are TVs that were manufactured maybe 15, 20, 25 years ago, oftentimes by companies that are no longer major players in the industry today. They may not be in the industry today. Likewise, televisions that are manufactured today are not entering the waste stream for another 15, 20, 25 years, when that company that manufactures it today, again, may very likely not be in business, or because this is a fast-changing industry with new entrants and easy exits, will not be around to pay for their share. So this was an attempt to use sales data or market share data in order to cost share among the television manufacturers, or at least those who are defined as television manufacturers according to this amendment. I think we should probably hear from proponents and anyone else who wants to speak to it.
Okay, thank you. Tom Gallagher, and then I'll ask also Julie Brandes to come up, who are representing differing viewpoints, and you can state your name and also who you're representing. I think that would be helpful. Make sure there's a chair there in between.
No, we were just thinking we could start our own TV show.
What would you call it? That's what I want to know.
We're still working on the market testing on that. Go ahead.
And both Tom and Julie were members of the work group, and so we had lots of discussion about this issue. Tom, could you also clarify for the record who you're representing in the coalition?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Tom Gallagher. I represent a group called the Electronic Manufacturers Coalition. They are basically the long-term television manufacturers, Sony, Panasonic, JVC, Samsung. There are 20-some members of the coalition. They've been in business all through this, the history of the television market here, and this is why we have this amendment. They are also the only out-of-state people involved here that have no nexus here in the state. We don't manufacture in the state. We don't sell in the state. We are the last point here. What I want to talk just quickly about is the difference between the television market and the computer market. And by and large, the term manufacturer responsibility was based as much on the computer market, or more on the computer market than the television market. The average waste counts on television show that they are 15 to 17 years old before they get returned. TVs get reused a lot. People don't throw them away. They don't go out of date. They still have the same programs today as they had 15 years ago when they were made. It's a very easy entry, easy exit market. The Consumer Electronics says that 70% of the TV manufacturers who are around today weren't here 10 years ago. We are walking a very close line here because we've been supportive of recycling. We do not like basically manufacturer pays because it creates inherent inequities, and we're the last holder here, the one who gets the inequities. The way the manufacturer responsibility piece is set out in manufacturer registration is something we agree with in a good program because nobody gets out. If you manufacture a television set 20 years ago and you're no longer in business and somebody holds your license, which RCA, GE, somebody holds that license, they're responsible for paying for that share of return share of the TVs that come back in the market. So you can't even say, okay, I don't want to play in the Oregon market. I won't sell televisions here under this bill because you are going to pay on your historical basis. Those historical television sets are going to come back in the waste stream don't have... There was no money set aside to pay the cost of recycling on it. That either the company has sold their license to somebody else who holds it, who just have to write a check now both for registration fee and for the recycling costs. And that's all they can do about it. There's no way under the manufacturer responsibility to move out of that. Now, we're not here to basically object to the bill. We proposed a bill with an ARF in it last time. The retailers and Hewlett-Packard didn't like it. They like this section of the bill, this rendition of the bill better. We've tried to find a way to make this fair for the Sonys and the JVCs and the others who've been in the business for 20 to 25 years, who have market share that will come back and who are currently selling. Their new piece of the market is a new way to sell, which is you have a U.S. company which has their TVs manufactured perhaps in China, and then they will sell in the market here. They're a brand new brand. They don't have a historical share. They will come in and they will price their television out. Now let's assume that the majority of televisions right now are sold through the big box retailers. So they'll go to Bentonville and they'll talk to Walmart about what's the cost of buying television sets brand X. And they won't have a cost of recycling in the cost of selling a television set. Sony will go to Bentonville and say, well, we're going to sell some of these TVs in Oregon, and we're need to going to find a way to have a chance to recover part of that cost of recycling. It's unlikely that given the market power of the big box retailers, it would be able to pass that on. Your Hepner store Representative Smith, will not have that buying power. So if I'm pricing a Sony TV out in your Heppner store against a Sony TV in Walmart down the road, there's a good chance that that price of recycling will be in one and not in the other. What we tried to do to solve this, and we poked around in the work group in a number of different ways, most of which I was thinking of and didn't work, and most of which then became a...
Yes, excuse me, Madam Chair. I'm sorry to interrupt. May I ask a question?
Yeah.
Tom, before you get off that, I wanted you to go back and elaborate a little bit. Your example of the Sony TV set sold at Walmart in Portland versus one out in Heppner. Why would the cost attributed to the recycling not be included in the units sold in Heppner? Same manufacturer, same unit.
Yeah, the manufacturer sells a television set not to the end producer here. In the case of Walmart, they sell 150,000, 200,000 Sony television sets to Walmart, let's say. And I use Walmart generic. Let's not use Walmart personally because that... Big box. Sell 150,000 TV sets to Big Box in Seattle. All right? Don't know where those television sets are going. Big Box in Seattle drives the best price they can get. And they say, this is the price we want to pay for these television sets. Well, what about the small portion that's going to Oregon? I don't know how many are going to Oregon. Too bad. And if we want that Sony television set in Big Box, we'll sell them at that price. When we have a different kind of a distributor, when we don't have that kind of buying power, that, you know, we're going to price that television set to them in an attempt to recover part of those costs. If we can't recover the cost from the sale of television set, where does it come from? Where does the money to pay for the recycling come from?
Okay, well, I follow up, Madam Chair.
I
thank you, Tom. I understand that now, but now my subsequent question is, I'm not quite sure how that is relevant to the issue at hand here between the two of you, where we're trying to figure out whether we do return share or market share.
Well, here's the way that works, Madam Chair, Representative Burley. The only way we could figure out to have each of the sellers in the current market having the same responsibility to put the cost inside of their product was to make them all equal. And if I have Sony, who's been there for 20 years, who's going to have a return share, therefore a cost based on return share, and Brand X, who has no return share, therefore no cost based on return share, if Brand X has 10% of the market, then we would recover those costs from the current sales share, and Brand X would be paying part of the historical legacy recycling, almost the same way as you do... at least on an equal basis for one manufacturer to the other, the same way that Sony would be recovering it, then they will be paying for the cost of recycling out of the current sales of the television sets. Therefore, every television set sold in Oregon, per se, or sold into the Oregon market would have the exact same cost loaded on it, those costs being the basis of their market share. So Sony, who has, say, 5% share, before and 5% share now, would be able to recover the cost of recycling and the sale of their product. Brand X, who doesn't have a recycling share but a 5% market share, would be paying for 5% of the recycling the same as Sony. That's why market share works as opposed to return share. In return share, Brand X would have no cost now. Easy entry, easy exit market. Brand X sells for 10 years, closes down the corporation. They still probably have some legal right to pay for their return share 10 or 15 years down the road when it hits. That's a long time away. It doesn't do anything about the current market. It doesn't do anything about the current competitive situation. That's basically where I am, Madam Chair. We would like to be able to support this bill. We would like to be able to, you know, find a way to put those costs into current sales. If we don't put those costs in current sales, there's a lot of really good and big manufacturers that are significantly disadvantaged under the way the bill is currently written.
Thank you, Tom. Any questions for Tom? Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Gallagher, I'm trying to understand why the separate allocation by market share is limited to those manufacturers who have greater manufacturer of televisions and computers and monitors, as opposed to just separating the waste streams generally and saying that what we're going to do is take all the costs associated with televisions and allocate them based on market share, no matter whether the participant in manufacture also does computers in greater or lesser degree or not.
Madam Chair, Representative McPherson, so would have I liked to have done that. I am shooting a crooked arrow through a crooked target here. I have some manufacturers of television sets who are very large computer manufacturers who would only agree to my amendment if they were included. Sony and some others also manufacture computers, and we'll do our computers under this system, but other manufacturers didn't want to. Secondly, I went to work with DEQ, who has accounting system and the responsibility of making sure they can enforce this program and make it work and it's fair. And there were a number of questions about fairness up here. Bob and I have gone through this, and we think that this taking return pounds and allocating them according to the registration, you register as a TV manufacturer, and therefore your cost of the recycling will be calculated on return on market share rather than return share. The computer manufacturers will be calculated on return share rather than market share. Those two calculations are fairly easy for DEQ to make and pay for the cost of their program. So I think what we've done here with this amendment, if you recall on the last day of hearings, they asked HP if they could agree to this amendment, and they answered yes. And they asked Mr. Danko if this amendment would work, and he answered yes. So those were the two ends of the spectrum that I was working with to move this amendment through. If it looks a little boxy here, if it looks a little, it will work. It will work just like the rest of the pieces of the bill here when they fit together. But I would have preferred to have made it an easier way.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any other questions before we move on, Representative Cannon?
Madam Chair, question for Tillum. How, so you represent maybe 20-some manufacturers. Do you have a sense of their market share right now within the television world?
Madam Chair, Representative Cannon, it would only be a guess, and that would probably be wrong. I mean, there are some of them. I can tell you that there are about 12 of them that will be over the 1% market share. And I'm not, you know, there are 12 manufacturers. I think all of them are members of my coalition, but that's based on Washington data.
But can you give a follow-up, Madam Chair, some sort of range? Are we talking, are they today in the current television market combined collectively less than 25% of the total market?
Madam Chair, I can come back and get you that information, but after 30 years of this, I hate to get up and make a guess like that. If I had to guess, I'd say it's over 50%. But
that they collectively represent over 50% of the market.
That's just a plain guess. It's not based on data that I have.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Any other questions? Julie.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for your record, I'm Julie Brandis, representing Associated Oregon Industries and its Retail Council. We also represent manufacturers. Retailers often brand their own items, so we are a manufacturer under this legislation. I'd like to make 3 points, one about consistency, one about producer responsibility, and one about market share. On consistency, now I just checked this out this morning, and I can't 100% verify it, but what I'm looking at is that some states have developed a market share approach, and some states have looked at implemented a return share approach, and some have the advanced recovery fee, or the ARF. But I don't think any state has this hybrid. And so in terms of consistency, we would really like to be able to come and support a producer responsibility approach based on return share. As far as the producer responsibility, you know, what we see is if it's fair for one technology considered under this act, we think it's also fair for the other technology considered under this act. We envision producer responsibility as when you make something, an electronic product covered under this act, then you take responsibility for your share of that return product. The words we've used in the discussion and the debate and the work group is, you know, this is about recycling, reuse. So you take responsibility for your share of that product.
Madam Chair.
Yeah.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Smith.
If they're taking responsibility, why are they asking the retailer to step up and provide their information for them?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, the retailers and the manufacturers that I represent are one and the same. And again, the reason that we are taking responsibility is we feel that we're selling the product, and we have to do our part as opposed to doing like an advanced recovery fee, which would have put all the onerous or all the implications of the act on us. Again, we are not excited about mandates, but it is what it is.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So producers take responsibility, and we also take responsibility for orphan product. And the work group agreed to this philosophy. We didn't discuss this bifurcated system of having a market share approach for one technology within the work group. We see that market share is a bit causing a bit of concern for us, because it says it's not about the product that's coming back. Market share says, based on all the tons of TVs that are returned and the return share, and I appreciate all the help that Bob Danko's given me today in explaining this, but he finally had to draw me a picture. So, and it was very helpful, and I appreciate it. If you have a dumpster, or a recycled dumpster, for lack of a better term, and all this product comes back in it, you separate all the televisions that are covered under this act, and you take that, and you say, okay, based on these 100 tons that were collected of televisions, now your share is going to be apportioned by market share, not what came back in those, but by what you're selling today. And we have, very clearly, I represent people who are new entrants into the market, and they make lighter televisions, and they may be developing more market share, but they see that they have less responsibility for the heavy old televisions of the past. And so we're going to be apportioned a larger part of those products. So again, we'd like to see one system, and that is the producer responsibility with based on return share.
I have a question regarding, so either, I mean, my understanding, and I have been in the middle of the market of the market versus return share for 4 years, because we talked about VR for a couple of years, and then we went towards producer responsibility. My understanding is that the way I look at this bill, the entire bill is producer responsibility. It's manufacturer responsibility. It's how the share of the costs are apportioned. So it's either through one way, which is the market share, looks at what comes in the market, versus the other, what is returned at the end of the life of the product. So I just want to clarify that, because I understand you're saying you prefer, or the folks you represent prefer the return share, the folks you represent return the market share, but both of you are in agreement that that you support the producer responsibility aspects of this legislation. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we do support producer responsibility, but we think return share is the fair way, because otherwise we're taking producer responsibility for a product we didn't have anything to do with.
And why don't you answer first before I take other questions or comments?
Madam Chair, producer responsibility works if you're able to recover the cost in your current sales. And it doesn't work if you're not able to do that. Every one of my manufacturers has been in, will be in the waste stream and in the sales. And we will pay just about the same under either system. What we think is that it's not fair if we can't recover the cost of that system in our current sales. That's all. So do I support producer responsibility? Only if I get my amendment.
Could you... That's on the record now, Tom. Could you talk about, in Washington, the coalition, what was their view on the Washington bill?
Madam Chair, we hate the Washington bill.
Okay, Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just talk about producer responsibility. I think it sort of loses sight of the fact that ultimately my assumption is that there is sort of consumer responsibility. My assumption is that you'll all be, whoever's paying for this program, whichever manufacturer is going to be looking for ways to pass this on to its consumer. I think that's fair and legitimate. The question then becomes, and this is where I am sort of sympathetic to the point Tom's making, it's easier to pass that on to the consumer if you're selling lots of volume. If you're only selling, you know, if you're the Sony that used to have a big share of the market but today has a small share of the market, it's going to be harder. You're going to have to, if you're responsible for all that Sony that's coming into the recycling stream today, then you're going to have to raise your costs to the consumer on that Sony pretty significantly, because you're only selling a few of them. Julie, can you respond to that characterization, or is it a mischaracterization? I mean, it seems like we might be unfairly punishing these sort of legacy manufacturers.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, in terms of punishing the retailers and the manufacturers that I represent, we're not proposing to punish anyone. This is not the legislation that, you know, we've developed. But nationwide, what we have done is we have said we either have supported, in terms of this legislation, we have supported either a return share or a market share. And we do think market share burdens the retailers of today. We can't pass on all these costs. I mean, it's far too competitive in today's world, and especially in terms of television manufacturers. I mean, it is not something that we can pass on to consumers. So what you're saying to us is you're punishing us for the return product of his clients. That's who's getting punished under this amendment.
Just follow up.
Representative Burley has a question.
Which of your members do you think will fall under this?
I have about four members who will fall under this. They're big box. I mean, Tom pointed out they're big box national retailers.
And they sell more TVs than computers.
Yes, sir.
And they are. Can you tell?
I don't know exactly if I can say. I know, for example, Best Buy doesn't even brand their own computer. They only brand their own television.
Okay.
Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, take my last question first now, because you just raised one, Julie. Using your one particular member as an example, when that company brands the TV, you're saying under this bill that makes that company a manufacturer. Mm-hmm.
That is correct.
And they would fall under this requirement if they sell, well, more TVs than computers under that brand.
Correct. Madam Chair, that is correct.
Why are we doing that? Why? I mean, if the TV's made by Brand X over in China and Best Buy sticks their brand on it, why are we making Brand X pay for this?
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Burley, one reason is you need a nexus here to go out and collect the money and to get people to register. So that's why you have a very complicated manufacturer responsibility here, which in basically we all agree with, that all manufacturers ought to be brought in. The single situation we're most concerned about is where the big box no longer makes their own branded TV. And I'm going to use a company that's no longer in business called Apex. One of the big box retailers heavily marketed Apex TV. Apex was manufactured in China, and it was sold through a company here in the United States. Without going into the sort of details, the TVs weren't very good. The big box quit paying Apex. Apex went to China. It didn't pay their bills in China. Apex is now in bankruptcy. It at one point in time had a 5% market share. Now those TVs will start coming into the system. And that is what we see under, as this recycling program goes forward and producer responsibility. That's what we see more and more of happening, that the nexus is with a middle corporation, a middleman corporation that neither manufactures or really does anything other than market the television set. And that's what we're really worried about. By the way, the president of Apex is in jail in China because he went over there and tried to explain what was happening, and they just arrested him. But
okay. Other questions for either of the panel?
Well, I do have a few more, Madam Chair, if
sure.
I may. But, Julie, did you want to address my
last question?
Go ahead,
and, go ahead and then Representative McPherson.
Tom, I'd asked you what the relevance was to your example with the big box, because I do recognize that
at least one company in particular, one big box company, does set the price because of the volume that they market. But I'm not sure, I mean, the issue about being able to pass this cost on to the consumer in that context would be the same whether we're basing it on market share or return share. I mean, that same phenomenon is going to exist either way.
Madam Chair, Representative Burley, I think that's true. There's no way that we can change that dynamic just by using market share. If this is the model that begins to catch on, there's an ARF working its way through two other legislatures. There are about four other states that have gone to this manufacturer responsibility. We suspect that this is the direction it's going to go. As more and more states get into that situation of recovering their recycling costs from the manufacturer charge, then a market share gets fairer and fairer. Then everybody will have that price or that cost built into their price. So this is the first state we've tried to do this in. And after Washington, after what we went through in Washington, the national folks are searching hard, very hard, for another model other than the ARF. And in the work group, we tried two or three different ideas we had, none of which were good enough to work. I'm perfectly frank, we've been desperately trying for a way to avoid this situation. The last piece we came up with is using market share, because at least that gives you a fighting chance, a competitive chance to try and get your price in. If that unnamed company continues to, you know, to drive the prices the way that they are, at least that'll be the same competition that everybody has to face, even the other retailers that sell to them.
Julie, I think, wants to add something, and you want to follow up.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I just want to make two points to clarify from the retail / manufacturer side of this. One, in terms of return share, we have never objected to picking up a share of the cost related to orphans. So, I mean, orphan televisions. and the second is
maybe DHS.
Not to be confused with orphan computers.
and the second issue is in regards to retailers who might have sold a product that is no longer on the market, such as Sears. I think I think there is a way, and I think in my discussions with DEQ, there is a way to go after those retailers and make sure they're involved with the return share.
Madam Chair, a few more.
And then Representative McPherson, and then Representative Smith.
Forgive me for taking up so much time, but
we're
going
to have to
understand this a little bit more. So let me, I'll just kind of throw them all out here, and then you can take them one at a time. Washington, if I understand, is a producer responsibility return share. Okay. Second question is, if we do the market share, is there a concern about proprietary information? Three, what happens when IBM buys out HP? Oh, I'm sorry.
Are you starting rumors
let me
here?
Let me rephrase that. What happens when HP buys out IBM? But let's go back to, though, the comment about, you know, we have TV manufacturers that go out of business. What happens if you have a merger? How does that work in the two different scenarios? And lastly, with high-definition TV coming on board, does that kind of give us perhaps a restart point in this whole discussion?
Whoever wants to answer it.
I'm glad you asked me all these questions. as far as the HP and the Intel, when one company buys out another company, under the way the manufacturer responsibility is set in this state, that liability will go to the new company, and that's fair. We're fine on that. In terms of I forgot your first two questions.
Washington has a producer
responsibility. Oh, Washington, yes, they have a producer responsibility. If I said we hate that one. Right.
I think I heard that.
Yeah, and there's going to be situations in Washington that are going to get more and more complicated. There are two states, Washington and Minnesota, that really are, you know, are driving the television side, the most difficult bills to deal with. And the second question was?
Proprietary information and
oh, yes. That's why we would use the national, we would use the National Manufacturers Association or a company. We will pay under the registration fee to have DEQ go out and hire a company or a national corporation to do this. There is market share data available on a national level and on a state level that can be prorated down to the state. It is about as accurate as counting which pieces of the waste come back in which year based on which part of the state. So these are not precise numbers. These are ways to divide the share up. In both cases, under market share or return share, we still have producer responsibility. We're still going to pay. We're not talking about whether or not we pay. We're talking about how we can collect.
Okay. And then the high def.
High definition.
That is a huge change in the market. It's going to do a couple of three things. Number one, it's going to create a whole bunch of legacy waste because people are going to get rid of their old television sets. And it's calculated for in California. We're expecting here there's going to be a huge flow of television sets through for a while. And number two, the new television sets that are coming out, especially the ones made by Philips and Panasonic and others, they're taking the lead out of the television sets. And partly Philips, which is a Dutch company and under the responsibility they have for selling in Europe, is doing quite a bit with the changing the innovation in terms of the lead and some of the other chemicals that they use in the television set, which that's you just got the total amount of my knowledge on that. And so you can buy you can put more producer responsibility into certain television sets with the long established brands are going to be doing better than the television sets that are sold at the low cost end. And that's another reason why we're looking hard at this, is because you can do easy entry, easy market with a low end television set that doesn't have any of this stuff in it. And the normal mechanisms for producer responsibility that are built into computers don't then occur in the television market. Your turn.
My turn. Questions, and then Representative McPherson has a burning question, but go ahead and answer if you'd like.
Madam Chair, I don't, in terms of Washington having a return or producer share or producer responsibility, I believe that is correct. They were sort of the first state to move away from the ARF, and they were a leader for both the retail community. They do not have this division. No other state has this division between part of the electronics covered under this act is under one under return share, and part is covered under manufacturer share. I agree with Tom on what happens when Kmart buys Sears. You know, the owner is now the owner of the responsibility. As for a high definition, I would suggest that, yes, that is going to create a bunch of legacy waste. And this is exactly why my members don't want to pick up a bigger share than the very small percentage that they have, because they have started their manufacturing, their new entrance to the market, and they don't want to pick up the share of that. They're willing to pick up orphans. I had to bring it up. But they're not willing to pick up, you know, a greater share based on, you know, a greater share of responsibility for Sony's, picking up a proportion of Sony's responsibility, as an example.
Okay, Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Brandis, I heard the argument that we should be keeping it all uniform, and apparently all other states have done that in terms of what using the return share or market share. But what are the problems with just with separating two waste streams and just treating them differently? Why does it need to be all the same? What are the considerations in that? I mean, I can see out the point of maybe at the point of collection there would be some simplification, but beyond that, it seems like rather than separating the television waste out then based on separate manufacturers, just knowing you could take market data, which would seem to be easier to gather than return share proportion, and apply it to across a whole band of the return product.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, first of all, we're not exactly in terms of return share. Those products are still coming back, and there's still going to be a tonnage based on what came back in terms of return share. That number will just be aggregated. So I want to make it sure that make sure the committee understands that we're still part of, in a sense, part of that return share. It's not a calculation, but we're still part of these products that are coming back. As for market share, it's not necessarily that it's huge confusion and that we're all going to be running around going, "Whoa!" You know, we don't understand this. I mean, I think the DEQ has done a good job of drafting amendment that's understandable. So it's not that it's a difficulty. It's just a fairness issue. And new entrants do not want to be responsible for picking up a greater share of the responsibility, if producer responsibility, because they're new entrants. Their argument is, since the product's coming back, since it's being measured, since it's being surveyed, we ought to use return share. That's what's fair, because this bill, what has brought us to the table, is about recycling. What do you do with this product when it comes back, and who takes care of it, and who's responsible for that product?
And one follow-up, I think, and that is to the question that I put to Mr. Gallagher, which is, if we were to go to this bifurcated system, as is proposed in this amendment, does it make sense to apply it only to those manufacturers who manufacture more televisions than they do computers, or should it be two completely different waste streams so that a manufacturer of both products would participate in market share as to one and return share as to the other?
Madam Chair, Representative McPherson, so are you asking me, should we just have...
Yeah, I mean, we recognize your preferred approach would be to stay with the return share for everybody, but if we were to implement a system that used return share for computers and market share for televisions, do you see merit in the way this amendment is proposed, which is to only apply that market share to those manufacturers who manufacture more televisions than they do computers?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I don't really have a good answer to that. I think the reason for companies who would be producing both, I mean, it's clear that they would want one system that they had to deal with, and that's why. And I don't know any company that produces that I represent, so I can only speak from my own knowledge that manufacturers fewer televisions than computers. So it's a hard question for me to answer.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Smith, did you have a question, or was that answered?
I do. And if this gets a chuckle, I guess it gets a chuckle. I'm so lost. I can't figure out what's going on here. And I apologize. I've tried to follow as best I can. Tom, you're advocating producer share.
Market share.
Julie, you're advocating return share.
That is correct.
Okay. And maybe everyone else understands this, and I don't.
Well, it's just to clarify, as I said before, they both support the producer responsibility. It's a matter of how you allocate the costs of the recycling program. Part of it is also whether you're paying up front or whether you're paying at the end, because some products can be 15 years before they're returned, so they're not going to, that cost isn't going to be allocated for 15 years. That's the return share. The market share is when you're entering the market, and you would be allocated the cost based on that share that you have when you're entering the market. Did I describe that as simply as possible? So they're both saying that they're agreeing to pay for it. It's a matter of how the costs are allocated.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I think both Julie and I have a good point, and I give credit for this. We're trying to find a way to pass the cost on for sales that we've had over the years currently. And Julie's saying, why do my new entrants have to pay a cost? Ultimately, they would have to pay the cost when they come out in the return share.
I get that.
And so we have the two pieces of the industry which are looking either to not to be disadvantaged by this bill. And that's why we have been reluctant to get up here and testify on this, because the inherent conflict occurs between the two sets of manufacturers who are caught in the financing mechanism of the bill.
Well, help me with this. If Julie, if you're saying you have no problem stepping up on the orphan pieces out there, and I assume orphan means the manufacturer that went out of business and these components are now coming in. If that's the case, and you don't mind picking up orphan pieces. Yeah. Tom, what's the dilemma with going with the return share?
The orphan share will be, under the way the manufacturer responsibility here is laid out, will be tiny, infinitesimal. I've heard reports that in Maine, which has a bill like this, it's less than 1%, because both the computer side and the television side have done a very good job of legally drafting who has to register and who has to get in the waste stream. If you now, or have you now, or have you ever been a manufacturer, mm-hmm. you have to register. So that means that new entrants into the market, which are coming on every day, will be at a market advantage in the sale cost of their television sets for some period into the future.
Got it.
And have an incredibly neat future look at how to game the system.
I get it. Thank you.
I saw the light bulb go off after Representative Smith said. Okay, any other questions for this panel? I also want to invite anybody else who wants to testify on this particular amendment. AEA, I see you hiding back there. Do you want to? Jim, do you want to come up and? Okay. Yeah. Anybody else? Since we did not have this is part of the public hearing, I want to make sure that there's time for testimony. Is Osberg going to come up? They want to take a vote if the committee wants to hear. you've got 2 minutes. You always do.
I have
yes.
very little of assistance to say.
Well, you represent a consumer organization, so certainly I think everyone's very interested.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jeremiah Bauman with the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group, or OSPIRG. To be very clear on how unhelpful my testimony will be, the outcome of this amendment will not change our position on the bill. We will support, under any circumstance, as it relates to this amendment. And I'm speaking on behalf of OSPIRG and attempting to represent my conversations with others in the environmental community. We started this, not everyone in the environmental community, I shouldn't speak for anyone else. We started this process with no opinion on return share versus market share.
Agnostic, I think, is the word that came to mind.
I may have used that word. This particular amendment has forced many discussions. I'm looking at this in much detail. The place I understand it now, and the way I'm looking at this amendment, just to summarize, if the amendment is adopted, it means that people who have only been selling products recently will pay a greater share of the cost of recycling products that were manufactured a long time ago. If it is not adopted, people that manufactured a lot of products a long time ago will end up paying a higher share, even though they don't sell very many products today. And those who only started selling them recently will bear little, if any, cost. I mostly just go back to the kind of principles that lead to producer responsibility. One is that the core of the idea is that the company is actually paying for their own waste stream. There's obviously a number of logistical hurdles to literally having every company pay for their actual products. It would be silly to have them trying to move them back and forth. So we've abandoned that literal interpretation of producer responsibility. But certainly, a return share-based system is, I would say, by a hair, slightly stronger producer responsibility, because the companies that are actually responsible for the waste being generated are the ones being billed for that particular waste. In theory, there is a slightly greater incentive for product redesign, for lengthening the life of the product, if it's tied to the volume of waste that you're generating. But given the many good issues Tom has raised, the length of the product in particular, in practice, they'll rarely, I think, have much practical implication. So I think there is it is slightly more preferable from an environmental perspective to have the program be based on return share, but again, it's very, very slight, and I think this is primarily about the fairness between the two groups of manufacturers, and the environmental piece of it is a very small part of the equation.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Jeremiah? Thank you. Anybody else that would like to come up? Okay. Well, with that.
Madam Chair, I move the -5 amendments to House Bill 2626.
Actually, we already.
Sorry, the -3. I got confused.
Okay. Representative Cannon moves the -3 amendments to House Bill 2626. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, just...
Representative Smith.
Just very quickly. I'm really struggling with this. This is an issue that's going to determine whether or not we have a level playing field for everyone. And I admire your leadership on this. I appreciate you bringing this forward. I'm not sure this issue has been completely resolved yet, and I'm not sure the two couldn't figure out a solution with more pressure put on them. I don't think there's a win for any of us in this situation.
Well, Representative Smith, I appreciate your comments. We have been trying for 5 years to resolve this issue, and it's come down to the crux of return share versus market share, and that's why, if I could be so bold, that's why Jim Craven is not coming up and testifying, because there is still disagreement in AEA's membership about the approach to take. And we've decided to take the producer approach, and I think that regardless of whether this amendment passes or not, this bill still accomplishes that. It still says that if you're going to manufacture computers or televisions, and you have to take responsibility for producing those in an environmentally responsible way and basically figuring out a way to pay for them. It's the question is, what's the fairest way to allocate the cost of that program? And I think we've heard on both sides pros and cons. So certainly like to hear from members of the committee, and then we'll take a vote.
Representative Cannon and Burley and Beyer.
Madam Chair, thank you. Unless a subsequent speaker convinces me otherwise, I will be voting no on the amendment that I just proposed, and I will vote no for a few reasons. One is that I agree with Jeremiah that just following the producer responsibility approach, in theory, this return share is slightly better. These arguments go from weak to weaker, by the way. The second point is that I think there is some merit to being consistent with Washington, which, of course, is just getting this program underway. The third is that I think the argument that Tom makes can be made for some computers as well. That why would we not then, I don't know how many Commodores are out sitting in folks' garage and whether Commodore still exists as a company, but they're certainly not producing many, if any, computers today, assuming they're not orphan waste, then why would they not want us to use a market share approach as well? And we've made very clearly the decision to use the return share on computers. I think that the consistency, again, points to doing so on televisions. And finally, and I almost hesitate to bring it up, but is that we didn't get to this in the work group. I mean, we really did operate primarily under the assumption that this would be a return share procedure, and it was left as an open question at the end, but we did operate under most of those sessions on the assumption that although some manufacturers would be bringing forward an alternate proposal, it wasn't vetted nor agreed upon in the work group. That said, neither was really the return share. It was sort of left as a hanging question, but I think procedure maybe points us a little bit towards staying with what we've got, which is return share for everyone. So anyone else want to take a shot?
Did you want to
comment?
Well, I'll support the motion as made. I think that for the television waste stream, because it's longer lived and there may will be some fluctuations over time in market share, that having it placed on the market share of televisions is a reasonable distinction. I'm a little troubled by what I perceive as kind of a ragged dividing line in the way this amendment's formulated, but I will support the motion as made.
Okay. Representative Burley, did you have any comments? You're going
to
flip.
Well, I had to borrow the coin from Representative McPherson. This has been a very difficult deliberation for me as well, and I'm not going to repeat because Representative Cannon said a lot of how I feel. I do want to add one thing to the debate, though, or to the discussion, and that is that I think this issue about the market share versus return share is really exacerbated by the high-definition TV, because it's going to have a huge influx of these units, and I think we'll see a lot more people entering the market. As Mr. Gallagher pointed out, it's a very easy market to enter, but they will enter at this point, because of the high-definition TVs that probably weren't making TVs back when it was old CRTs. So
I will oppose this motion as well, this amendment as well, and that's all I'll say. Thanks for the
thank you. Representative Byer, did you want to say anything?
Well, I mean, I don't know that I can add much more than anybody else has. This really is a I don't know whether there's a real win-win. I would hope maybe down the line maybe things might kind of even out and somebody, I mean, people don't get hurt more than the other. But, boy, it's one of those, I support my friends, and my friends are for and my friends are against this. So I think I'm going to go ahead and support the amendment at this point. And I don't know that I hold out a lot of hope that anything will get better over in the Senate, but that's where I'm at.
Okay. Representative Smith, do you want to say anything? Or?
I'd love to hear your comments first.
Well,
I've been in the building long enough to know how to count votes.
Oh, we're hearing it all here today.
Yeah. This is democracy in action. I actually am going to support this amendment, but as I've talked to every member, I think we've had a really good discussion here. I worked with the TV manufacturers last time. And as you know, we did try to pass an ARF last time that did not pass, did not prevail, and so we went back to the drawing board. And I really, one of the things that we tried to do was we tried to make a bill that was acceptable to everybody, and I think we almost got there with this approach. Unfortunately, when you have strong views on one aspect, which is the return share versus market share, where I don't necessarily think one is better than another. I think that you have good arguments on one side and good arguments on the other. The market is in flux. There was a lot of good discussion about this issue over the years, and so I actually am supporting the amendment. I think that for the folks who do have computers, I know we've talked to Hewlett-Packard, they're neutral on this, and other computer manufacturers. I want to make sure it works for all manufacturers, and thus I'll be supporting this amendment.
Actually, I was just messing with you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Either way, we're creating an unlevel playing field. We're either going to do it on price on the front end, or we're going to do it on expense on the back end. And in business, there's only two ways to enhance your profitability. One is either to generate more income. The other is to control your expenses. That's it. And so either way, we've created an unlevel playing field. I guess I'm gonna go and support this. And the reason for that is I think if we're going to create an unlevel playing field, we need to create it on the front end and give a company an opportunity to figure out how to at least eliminate the effects of the regulation by trying to figure out different ways to control the expense. And I think that's more doable for a company than trying to figure out how to moderate the revenue side.
Okay. So with that, I don't know if we want to take a roll call. There's been a motion made to adopt the dash threes. If the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Is excused.
Representative Burley?
No.
Representative Cannon?
No.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Dingfelder?
Aye. Dash threes have been adopted. And with that, I will take a motion for the entire bill.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2626 be passed. Does it go away from me? Yes. As amended by the LC-3-4-5-6 amendments to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation and a prior referral to Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you, Representative Cannon. And before we go into any discussion, first of all, I want to thank all the members of the audience who have spent many years, hours of their time, and working very hard to make this the best bill possible. I want to thank the committee members for also all their time and effort, especially Representative Cannon, for the many hours spent chairing the work group. And I do believe that we've done the best job possible in making good public policy here, making it good for Oregon consumers, and also making it workable for manufacturers and for retailers. And I want to thank everybody who has had extensive input. If anybody wants to come over to my office and read, this is just from this session of input. I certainly appreciate all the hard work that's gone into this. So With that, is there any discussion before we take the final vote? Representative Burley.
Yes, Madam Chair.
I'm going to give you a courtesy vote on this and reserve my right to change it on the floor. And the reason for that is because I find it a little bit on the difficult side. We've got 5 amendments here, all of which basically are gut and stuffs. So, for example, I will, and I don't expect this to be answered today, but one question I'm going to look at in the final engrossed version is, what exactly is the definition of manufacturer? Because I don't know if it's the dash 4, the dash 3, which one it is that we're using.
It's the dash 5.
Oh, well, see, and you can't have 5 without 3 or so, you know, so, I mean, it's a little bit confusing to me. So what I'm going to do, Madam Chair, as I said, I'll go ahead and give you the courtesy vote today, but I'm going to reserve the right to change that because I want to see the engrossed version, see what's exactly in there.
Okay, and I apologize. Unfortunately, the way the bill was, because it was a gut and stuff from the original bill, and then every version of the amendment had to repeat that, it was very confusing. And that's why we spent so much time going through that today. And I apologize Mr. Bowles, who now knows more about computers than he ever thought he would know, and we'll hopefully invite him back on Wednesday or Friday to give us informational presentation. But and this will be going to Ways and Means before it comes to the floor, so you'll have lots of time to look at that and discuss that. Any other discussion? Okay, will the clerk call the roll, please?
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Jensen, excuse. Representative
Burley?
Yes.
Representative
Cannon?
Aye.
Representative
McPherson? Aye. Chair Dinkle? Aye. The motion carries, and House Bill 2626 is amended as it is passed to the Ways and Means Committee by prior referral, and I will carry the bill to the floor. With that, we will close the work session on House Bill 2626.